What's good, wagering world? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm in here with the OG of the show, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. He has on the specs today. What's good, Spencer? How are you?
Yeah, I was telling you before we started the show, I've been wearing these a little while. I've been hiding it on the show, but I was doing some work when you logged on. I said, hey, I'll leave it on. No more hiding the fact anymore. Your boy's about to turn 50. He needs the reading glasses. How you been? Quite the weekend for us, huh?
Yeah, man. Birthday in, as you talk about it, we're getting on up in there, man. I'm getting deep in those 40s now. So, you know, it's time to just kind of respect everything about life and kind of accept growing older and grow older with a smile, man, because you got two options. You're either going to get older or die. So I like living to take care of my children and spend time with my wife. So as you and I always push on this show, we try to get our workouts in every day and try to stay healthy and, you know, eat as best as we possibly can as well. So just another year around the sun, as they say, and, you know, I'm thankful for it, but I am tired because, you know, I partied a little bit more than normal with my wife and hung out a little bit more, drunk a little bit more nail than usual. So it's on me a little bit. If I'm a little groggy, you guys forgive me. I am tired, but I got to reset because the group needs me to come through with some good plays, man, and that's what I'm planning on doing. What's been going on with you?
Man, same stuff. We had a great college football weekend. So credit to you for getting us up on the right start. That's always fun to start with a little bit of momentum. Of course, it's home league season. Yeah. I did a draft last weekend. I got a draft coming up this weekend. So it's always fun to see some old friends and, you know, for guys like us, right? I just kind of roll up. Like, I've already done all my research. I already know where I'm going. Right. So I just kind of get to relax and enjoy it and maybe make a couple comments here or there. And we also have a little bit of NFL news that I might sneak in that happened in between the time that you sent us our docket for the day and a couple more signings there that I want to talk to you about. So overall, doing real good, though, man. Happy to be alive and definitely happy the football season is here.
Happy that football is here, man. The show is called The First of Many because this is week one. We finally reached it. It's no longer something that we're just looking at the calendar, wishing and hoping and praying for. You just asked me about, did I know about the news about the Raiders signing Amari Cooper? And I didn't because I haven't been watching anything, man. I've been just doing my own research. I used to watch a little Colin, but now he's fed into all of the bias stuff that's going on too. At first, he was speaking really highly of what he thought could happen with Shedeur Sanders in Cleveland and things like that. And he did a complete 360 this last week, I guess, to fall in line with the guys that pay him and, you know, his colleagues and things like that, because we all know this stuff is a company man, buddy-buddy type situation in any professional atmosphere. That's why I've always pride of myself on being my own boss and never having to be a guy who has to agree with anyone just to get ahead, especially if it's something I don't agree with. So I haven't been watching as much talk shows and sports talk because it's the same stuff going on. I see it on X and I can't escape it because I have to come on X and I talk to some of my guys who are subscribed to the group. And I also go on there just to, you know, tweet every now and then and keep people updated on the shows and when we're going to give out some free plays and just to try to give out a little love as well. You know, I pride myself in not only this show being about teaching people how to be a better sports better, but also about us all being better humans. They're getting on my nerves, man, with the coverage that they're doing with Shedeur and with Shiloh. Shiloh was undrafted, man. And like, only thing that you saw is over and over that, like, flashing this skirmish that wasn't anything that actually was started by the guy from the Bills. It's like it was a planned hit. He goes and gets under skin, makes Shiloh spaz. Shiloh throws the second punch, and as you know, they always catch the second guy, right? So when they catch the second guy, man, which is Shiloh in this case, they throw him out the game. It seemed like it was just all scripted. It looked so fake because not only the dude from Buffalo unnecessarily aggressive with him, But after he swings the punch, Shiloh hits him with a little half punch, the more push than punch. He gets to doing this, like, throw him out, throw him out. I'm like, what is this, man? And then immediately the next morning, he's cutting this everywhere, but he's an undrafted free agent. So why is this such a big deal? He isn't the first undrafted free agent not to make a team. He's not the first guy on the football field to get in a skirmish. I've seen a lot worse fights than that in the NFL. So it's just some really biased coverage going on, man. A lot of analysis on Shador that's really tainted, that's flawed, that's not coming from a real place. It's just coming from a place with an agenda. And it's really sickening to see, man. It's one of the saddest things that I've ever seen before with how they're treating these kids who are just trying to play football.
And the worst part about it is I feel like the NFL almost colluded because they want to be so right that Shador's bad. Yep. They're like, we'll just make sure we're going to make it so he has to go to the worst organization in football.
Yeah.
So then if he fails, which I don't need to remind you how many quarterbacks drafted at the Cleveland Browns have failed. I mean, who's the last good one they had? Bernie Kosar?
Right.
I mean, the list of number one draft picks overall that have failed in Cleveland, it's the organization. It's not the players, in my mind. Development matters so much. Now all these other guys are going to be able to victory lap. See, I told you. See. And it's just disappointing because, like you said, with the Shiloh, I feel like Shador's been set up to fail by going to a poorly run organization. And also, it's just a tough place to play football. You're in the north, some of the worst weather in all football, right? And then they're going to compare his stats to a guy like Jared Goff or C.J. Stroud, who's sitting, you know, with all these weapons, great coaching, and they get to play in a dome. I'm still rooting for him, man. And the stuff that happened earlier, I don't hold it against him. I want him to be good. The NFL would be a better product if they had 40 starting caliber quarterbacks. So I don't know why any NFL fan would be rooting for a quarterback to be bad. How many times at the end of the year, hey, do you want to watch the game? It's Aiden O'Connell versus Daniel Jones. Do I really want to watch the game? Right. I mean, Desmond Ridder is out there. Tyler Shuck. I mean, we should want these guys to be good. So, man, the odds are stacked against him. But all I can say is if he's able to succeed under these conditions, that victory lap's going to be even sweeter, you know?
Yeah, they made him have the hardest road we've seen any college quarterback with his ability have to deal with, man. I haven't seen this type of stuff since when they blackballed Charlie Ward back when he was the best player in college football and didn't even get drafted just because he
ends up on the Knicks.
Because he told a couple of the scouts that he was considering playing in the NBA, you know. So it's the same thing, man. These guys create the narratives that they want. And as simple as that, they create who's going to be the number one pick. You guys hit that like button if you're right now and you're rocking with the Wage World and send your, you know, questions or rebuttals. We're live right now, so spread and shoot out a couple after I break this down. So I'm just really upset with the fact that I know quarterback. Now, if I didn't know quarterback, it'll be a little different, you know, right? I just sit back and say, well, maybe this, maybe that. He does have some things to work on, but all quarterbacks do. But you can tell with what happened, it was complete collusion. Everyone knows that because none of the quarterbacks that were drafted before him were better than him in college, except for Cam Ward was 1A, 1B right there.
Yeah, you can argue Ward was a better prospect just off the measurables. I didn't have a problem with Cam Ward going ahead of him.
They used Cam Ward as a pawn and as a piece to show people, see, it's not a race thing. We let Cam go, but Cam to be in that position had to be someone who he was. When he went to the draft, he was dressed completely down, looking like he's going to freaking work in a cubicle. And that's not by chance, man. He doesn't even dress like that. He's a flashy kid with jewelry and all that stuff, too. So it's just a whole bunch of nonsense. But if you can see through the smoke and mirrors, you know the truth. And if you can trust yourself with the film like I trust myself, and people, you know, on exit. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know ball. The difference between you and I, why I do know ball, is because I'm sitting right here now in a house that's over $1.5 million in Summerlin, Nevada, in the mountains, from nothing but knowing football, from betting football, from being able to analyze these games and tell you what's going to happen. And I've done this for a long, long time, and I've been really successful. And the key to it is quarterback analysis, head coaching analysis. Those are the two strongs. That's why we just won with Iowa State. My whole bet on that game was Matt Campbell and his ability to coach, make the right decisions during the game, and also with Rocco Beck being a coach's son, an ex-NFL player's son who can really play ball at quarterback to make enough key plays. Even though we know that Kansas State had the speed, they had the splash, they didn't have what you can rely on, and that's the consistency. And that's what you get from a team that's well quarterbacked and well coached. You're not going to tell me that one of the best prepares in the history of the NFL and Deion Sanders, which they tried to downplay, but any of his teammates who know him or any of the people who worked with him will tell you he studied more film than anyone. That's what had him prepared. That's why his athletic ability looked so good, because he was always in the right place. He knew everyone was supposed to be on the defensive side, and he knew the offensive side of all, because he had always approached the game with, I'm going to be a coach one day. And actually, Prime wanted to play quarterback. And that's why he raised Shador. What's up? How you doing, brother? That's why he raised Shador in the manner that he did to, I'm going to model you after Tom Brady, since they're saying they don't want quarterbacks that scramble all over and I've been in the NFL, and they say that the best players are the quarterbacks that play on time, the ones that can sit in the pocket, that can throw receivers open, that can anticipate, that can make window throws. And he teaches them all of this thing, and now it became, oh, he's not athletic enough. So not athleticism, even though he ran a 4.7 his whole career, you know, in college, not athleticism is what you're going to knock. But then they tried to say you got guys like Danny Cannell, sorry as hell. Dan Orlovsky, sorry as hell. Neither one of you guys were ever as good as Shador was in college when you were in college. And they making all of these, oh, look at me. He does this. He's just not ready. He doesn't read the defenses fast enough. Look at him floating back. You will be floating back, too, if you have the offensive line saying ole over and over. Like, literally nobody was blocking for him the last game. And it's just a bunch of mess, because the first game when he played well with the second string players and third string receivers and backs, they said, oh, it's just preseason. But now this game, when he plays horribly with fourth and fifth string guys, they actually cut four of the offensive linemen who were blocking for him last preseason game. Now it's, oh, he's terrible. Look at him flowing back. He's not reading the defense. He's not picking up anything. Then they try to say, oh, he works from a shotgun. His whole career hasn't gone under center much. BS. See, at Jackson State, they were under center 60% of the time because they ran the ball out the eye. Dylan Gabriel, on the other hand, actually was in the shotgun probably 90% of his plays, whether it was at UCF, whether it was at Oklahoma, whether it was at Oregon. And they just set this kid up for failure. The only reason that the Cleveland Browns even drafted him was for money. That was it. They knew the type of noise that it would make, the type of hype that it would get, and to give them a eye on that team that no one cares about outside of that Cleveland area. And it did, because their owner is known for breaking code with the rest of the owners. He's the only one who's known for kind of going against the grain, like he did with Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson would have never got signed. I don't believe Deshaun Watson would have been signed still. Not only did he sign him, he gives him the first guaranteed contract for press. And to be contrarian to the league, it was clear as day that this was a collusion situation, and each team was told not to take him. And then when he ends up with Cleveland, that's the worst scenario you want to end up in. You got Kevin Stefanski. He's getting all this hype like he's such a great coach. He won Coach of the Year twice, I guess, because the people voting just couldn't believe that they had a winning record as far as Cleveland's organization is. Because if you
look, I think that's it. You get credit for winning there. And you get credit. Everyone knows that ownership is really bad.
He has a
losing the guy record. Drafted Johnny Manziel because a homeless guy told him to.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And then you throw Shador in this situation, and Stefanski clearly undermined him last game. especially with the play call. And if you watched, I didn't watch it live, but after I saw so many people talking about it on X, I went and watched it. And I'm like, why is Dillon Gabriel getting all these rhythm passes that highlight his strengths, getting off the ball quick? Because we know he's not that athletic. He's small, so he's going to turn the ball over. A lot of quick passes, easy reads, and Shador gets to the game with no blocking. And they want you to evaluate them the same way. Like, come on, man. It's just a clown show right now. And I think that.
Dude, I don't think Dillon Gabriel can start in the CFL. And you know these CFL quarterbacks better than me. But really, like, maybe the bottom two. I haven't been keeping up as much as you do. But I mean, he doesn't even look like, he looks like a UFL type guy.
He wouldn't even maybe be good in the UFL just because he's so little, man. He's going to have problems being over the line. You know, he plays with heart. I give him that. He thinks more of himself than he is. He has some moxie. That's a good thing.
So does Gardner Minshew. How did that turn out?
Exactly. But Stefanski, if you have Baker Mayfield, who is now, I'm going to say, a top 10 quarterback in the league, Heisman Trophy winner could play, and you can't do anything with him. He looks better when he goes to another organization. That says a lot about you as supposed to be a quarterback head coach. Like, he's supposed to be a quarterback guy. So I just hate that the situation he got in, because now it's a snowball type of thing going on, and you're going to have all the haters piled on. And see, I told you, but you can't tell me, because the difference between me and them is that I put my money where my mouth is. My family can attest to what I do. You spread as a friend of mine who's came around me and lived with me on my personal life, been around me like that, know what I'm speaking of, because I really put it on the line out here. So if you know so much about quarterback position, you know so much about football, why aren't you making money off of this, man? Why are you going to this construction job every day? And writers, why are you're so smart, you're such a good sports bettor, you got such these great opinions, why are you getting paid for writing and you're only betting $5 a week, right? So I feel like I'm going to always trust those who are most invested in a matter. And I look at this tape when I look at any college quarterback. I look at their tape with no bias, man. I just want to know who can play football because my money's on the line, you know. And I just think this guy got snubbed. I think that they're trying to set an example of them. I think that Deion made a lot of enemies when he went and played baseball, and they didn't want him to do that during football. When he became the first guy who kind of controlled his own future when he was going back and forth from San Francisco to Dallas after he left Atlanta and got out that contract. And a lot of those old heads, as I've said before, are still around in the NFL, and they have long memories. They don't forget. And they had a bone to pick, and unfortunately, they're paying for the sins of the father, man, in this situation. He had a big beef with CBS. So CBS, as we know, are partners with the NFL. It's a lot more going on to the story than we'll know. But at this point, Prime's better than me. They're real resilient, because I would have went on TV and cussed out everybody. I would have told my son, take off your pants. You're not playing in this league. We don't have to play in this league. We're going to find something else to do. Let's try to concentrate on maybe getting us some money together and starting our own league. Like, I would have been on that. That's the type of person I am, because it's clear as day that they're trying to show him, boy, stay in your place, and that this is our league and we do what we want to do. Because all of the stuff that I'm hearing from these certain media members is just disheartening, man, to see. I do want to say shout out to Kurt Warner, shout out to Urban Meyer, a couple of guys who are being honest about this situation. TJ Houshmandzadeh, you know, a couple of guys are honestly telling the truth about what's going on. RG3, he's been telling the truth about the matter as well, because he's a guy that kind of got in a situation where organization failed him as well. So it's really something that I'm tired of seeing. I'm tired of talking about it, because much like the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese thing, no matter how you want to spin it, 95% of the takes are based on what? Race. Like, let's be real about it. Like, it's few people like you and I who are just talking about the sports aspect of it. Guys are coming with tainted reasons for their evaluations on this situation. And all I could just say is, man, the best of luck to Shador and Shiloh. I don't know if Shador is going to stay with Cleveland or not. He's a really determined kid, and I think that he wants to overcome all that stuff and kind of show them that he could be the franchise guy. But at this point, I don't even know if I want him in the NFL, brother, to be honest.
I think he'll come back, because even if he doesn't pan out here, there's still a market for quarterback, and there's going to be a GM that needs his job, right? I mean, how many guys are in the last year they're willing to do anything? So I just don't know if it works out here in Cleveland. It might be his second spot.
It's like girls with quarterbacks, though, Spread. Even though one is beautiful and looks good, if she got a bad reputation, you know what I mean? It's no one's going to touch her. So they've created – you tell a lot.
I'm just saying, a guy like Shane Steichen, or I think it's Ballard, the GM there. I mean, they might take a risk because they know it's their last year.
If so, why didn't they draft him? You know, like Cleveland's the only team that
gets. I'm just saying, after Cleveland gets rid of him, because I think the tape's going to play out and prove what we've been saying. Now, is the team going to win games? I don't know. But I think the coaches are going to look. And you know how this media is too, right? Colin and all those guys are going to be on something else next week.
Yeah.
Right? Or but next year, maybe, right? There'll be some new guy that they all want to railroad. There'll be some new guys they want to coronate. And once Shador is kind of, you know, right now he's front page news. But how quickly does this stuff go away? So I think he'll have a chance to eventually still be successful in this league. I just would be surprised if it's with Cleveland. And it's just because I think you got to be a Joe Burrow type of guy, a Mahomes, an Allen, a Lamar.
But right? See, that's the problem. Joe Burrow's game is no different than Shador. If you would have pushed Shador with that LSU team, he would have did the same thing. I watched.
Yeah, that's what I think too. So we'll see how it works. But I think Cincinnati's terrible. I'm still mad that Joe Burrow's there. And I know while we're on the show, they re-signed Trey Hendrickson, but good for them. But it's just another case of bad management. Because if they would have re-signed him last year at this time, they could have got him for $10-15 million cheaper on the deal. Same with T. Higgins, same for Ja'Marr Chase. So they pay him their guys, but they're paying them at the top of the market. If they pay them early, like Green Bay does, you know, like Philadelphia does, they could have snuck another player in there and helped out that defense. Joe Burrow's going to go down.
The talent in the world,
older people, it's going to be like Dan Marino and Elway to a certain extent. Well, we're going to be telling them, you guys have no idea how good these guys were.
Yeah.
If you didn't watch them, we're going to be telling the younger generation, you had no idea how good Joe Burrow was. He could have had three or four rings if he was with Andy Reid and Spagnuolo.
Talent is the first thing, Spread. But the next thing after talent, that's the God-given talent. Is great. Like, that's the number one thing you need to play any type of sport. But now you have to have the help around you. You got to have the people around you who believe in you. You got to have the people who are going to give you the right opportunities. Yeah. The great thing about Joe Burrow was nothing coming out of high school. He was, I think, a 3- or 4-star recruit. His dad was a defensive coordinator at Ohio. Used to play quarterback himself, I believe, in the CFL. It ends up where Joe Burrow gets an opportunity because Coach O's just a good dude, man. You know, Coach O said, look, we're going to give you a shot. Come on over here, son, and play with us. Exactly, Nicholas. No one said anything about that. I called out Warren Sharp about that, too, because he just kept showing the Shador to try to act like you're so smart. You guys don't know football. If you did, you guys wouldn't be talking heads making $80,000 to $100,000 a year. You would be out here making $80,000 to $100,000 a month by betting on the game if you know so much about it, but they don't. But as I was saying, Joe Burrow came to LSU, not highly recruited, great team around him, great support, great guys. If anyone in this chat is an LSU fan like myself, the first year that Burrow started, we were worried about him. We didn't think he was that good, man. He didn't play well. The breakout game for Joe Burrow was in the bowl game the year before we won the national championship, when he took a late hit and the guy hit him really hard, man, late. I think they were playing – were they playing Iowa? I can't remember who we were playing in that bowl game. Creams him. Late hit, penalty flags go everywhere. The team comes to his aid. He gets back up, fights through the injury, plays still, leads them to a victory. The team rallied behind him. The next year – they played Texas in the first game of the year. I was at that game. Complete shootout.
I think I was on Texas.
Yeah. He put safety on him, right? But look, he has two of the greatest NFL receivers, two Hall of Fame receivers on the same team, and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, right? So this creates the path for him where now he's getting the help and he's getting the opportunity to showcase his toughness, to showcase that he can throw the ball. Now when he gets drafted, yeah, he goes to Cincinnati, which is a suck-ass franchise, but he tells them immediately, go get Ja'Marr Chase, and they go get him for him. They already got T. Higgins. So he still has guys that help him play his game. They built around him, even though it's a terrible organization. No one doubts that they believe in him and what he can do. And that gives you the confidence to use your talent. And that's the whole problem with this whole situation. If a team would have put the door in their arms and treated him like this kind of quarterback that he was worthy of being treated like from how he played at Colorado, yeah, he lost some games. Everyone has lost games. Mahomes had a losing record in college, but no one had a doubt that Mahomes could play from watching his tape. If you know football and you understand the pro position, you know that Shador can play because he's a great passer. You can't teach accuracy, man. You cannot teach accuracy. You cannot teach heart. He got hit over and over and over again in Colorado, and he got up every time. No matter how much people smoked him, because we know going into each game, the job was kill Shador. Nobody liked him because he was popular. He has 2 million followers on Instagram. He's on KFC commercials. He got a commercial here, a commercial there. They didn't want him to shine, so of course the defenses are coming out. We're going to stop him. And did they stop him? No. Just like Jared Goff. That's who was my comp for him. Jared Goff, same way, getting smoked in California. No blocking. No lot of talent around him, but he's throwing great passes. They're accurate balls. He's standing in that pocket. He's getting smacked, and he's getting right back up. He goes to a team with the Rams who believe in him at first. Jeff Fisher's the wrong coach. Has he derailed my homeboy Vince Young's career too? The Lord sends him Sean McVay. Sean McVay believes in him, but then he loses belief in him. But Jared Goff goes to Detroit, who believes in him. And guess what happened? He's right back on top. Every quarterback needs a locker room and an organization that believes in them, that's going to make going to take their money and spend it on things to make him better, to make his job easier. And then the talent will show. And that's the problem that we're dealing with Shador. They stopped all of that before it could even get started, you know? So we'll see how it works out. But it's one of the more disappointing stories. If I wasn't betting sports and making money off the NFL, I would not be watching it this year.
All right. Well, I've had the same issue with the NBA for years, as I've watched the quality of the product decline, but it's still beatable if you understand the sport. Yeah. But consuming the media coverage and the
so much
the toxic food. Fan bases are getting worse and worse, you know, and you got to sift through it all. But that's what we chose.
And people tell lies until they become the truth. If you say a lie over and over and over and over and over again, sooner or later, people start taking it as the truth, and that's what they've done with this situation. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. This is an old tactic that's been used by the Romans, by the Nazis. It's not new. They're just doing it through AI and with bots now.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move to the past here real quick as I throw some of these comments on the screen. We appreciate you guys for hanging out. If you're new here, this is the Wagering World. Subscribe to the channel. You'll be notified when we go live. And just like every other stream, we're going to ask you to hit the thumbs up. Five star, I'm loving this situation because we're going to talk about the past. And it's going to be a pretty pleasant conversation. Talk to me about what you saw in the game in Ireland where Iowa State defeated K-State to start their season right.
Hey, guys, y'all hit that like button right now. We're sorry that we weren't here Friday. Man, I just had a lot going on. And the great thing about being your own boss that you could just say, I'm not doing it. I got other stuff to do.
You didn't yell at yourself when you called in sick to yourself?
Yeah, I called in sick to myself. So that's what happened, man. I've just made an audible. Like, man, we're going to do it Friday, but guess what? We can't. And to all of the guys who reached out, they got to play. I sent it to Spread. I sent it to a couple more of my close friends like Ski, like Jay Money. We all cashed on Iowa State Moneyline and Iowa State +3. Simple thing about this game for me was just Matt Campbell. I followed him all the way since Toledo, and he's just a really solid coach. He's one of those guys that I believe could easily be an NFL coach. He approaches college football in the same manner. Rocco Beck showed a lot of heart, a little undersized, but he's been tutored correctly by his father, Anthony Beck, who's now a USFL coach for St. Louis, but played tight end for the league in the league for many years. And they just did a really dynamite job of getting us that victory. Their defense was really good. The best thing about that game for me was when I was watching it the first half, I'm looking at Hansen, who's the running back for Iowa State, and like, man, this guy has no burst. He's tiptoeing. He's scared as hell. What are they doing? And I'm like, if Beck has to drop back over and over, they're in trouble, because last year they beat K-State, but he went 13-35 and had like two interceptions, you know, and they barely won. So I'm like, this isn't going to work, you know, because Kansas State has a pretty solid defense and they have a solid head coach as well, had a lot of success at North Dakota State before coming to Manhattan. But the second half, Matt Campbell does what he does best and made adjustments. Changed up some things, got on the offensive linemen's asses and told them, hey, you guys got to fire off the ball. We got to run the ball. Hansen looked like a brand new guy out the locker room. And to me, that was the difference in the game, that Iowa State started making some traction in the running game. We're going to talk about the Big 12 action a little bit when we get to the futures. But they're one of the teams that I would not sleep on. I like a lot of the stuff that I saw out of them. They're going to have to get more from the Sowell, the kid that came over. First he was with Colorado, and then he ended up going to East Carolina. He didn't do anything. He dropped some balls that he should have caught as well. They're going to need more from the outside from them. But as far as in coaching and defense, that defense was solid, man. They made some big stops for us that got us that game. Kansas State, they're still going to be in the mix at the end of the year. I got to believe that, man. They have a really, really dangerous quarterback back there. Real dual threat guy with speed, and he's throwing the ball a little bit better this year. He's one of those guys that he's better at throwing the deep ball and putting touch on the ball. He doesn't really work well from the pocket on medium range passes, and he also is a one read quarterback. So that's what I was kind of fading, because I knew that Iowa State's coaching was so good that you can't run a limited offense like K-State was going to have to run, and K-State was going to have to average 5 to 6 yards a carry in order to beat them. That's how they beat teams. I knew that Iowa State's defense wasn't going to allow for that. Matt Campbell was not going to allow for that. And I knew that even though K-State had a really solid defense, he was going to be able to figure out ways to make some important first downs, get it in the box when they needed to. As you see, the biggest play of the game was at the end when it was 4th and 3. Iowa State is up 3 points. A lot of coaches right there kick the field goal and take the 6 points lead and say, defense, we're going to play this last minute. He took the control of the game like a real coach is supposed to. Let's go find our best play to go to right here to get these 3 yards and end this game. Finds Hansen in the flats with a quick little speed out from the backfield out into the flats, catches it. He burns the linebacker, scored a touchdown, but they called it back. And I know a lot of guys who had the over were sick about that, because I'm tweeting like, why didn't he slide down? Because I wanted to take a knee, and we just wanted to get the win. I didn't have a total, man. But great job by the Cyclones there. That was a very, very entertaining and good game for the first game of the year, man, out in Ireland.
All right. Talk to me about your tennis play. More winners there from Five Star. I know we got the U.S. Open going on, and these were rather low-level matches to what we got. But if you just want to give a quick synopsis, or we can just say congratulations and move on. Not sure how much you want to break down and tell us.
I'm glad that everyone cast Buzkova with us. I guess had to admire. That was a cruise. She did it pretty easy. Buzkova used the starch fast. Had to admire. Has not been the same since she got off the steroids. First set, Marchenko. This is where watching tennis and actually being a guy who's connected with the vibes of the matches and how the players are playing. And this is why I put all these hours in on watching these matches. We took Marchenko first set. She won it 6-1. She lost the match to the young Russian that she was playing, because Marchenko is a fast starter, and she died off and did not make it to the U.S. Open. And she's really talented, 21-year-old girl. So she gets us there for the first set. And then we get Ito, my girl Ito. But Ito ends up not going to the U.S. Open either. She loses in the finals of the qualifying rounds to a young lady from Korea, who ends up upsetting a big Kudermatova, Kuda Monster. So not good for her not getting to the U.S. Open, but she did take care of business for us and get us the cash on that one. Also, you remember, I leaned real heavy on Leisha Parks. We end up playing the second set and the match. She upsets Emma Navarro and Monta Ray. I'm very interested when we get off of this live show to go watch Leisha Parks take on young Mira Andreeva. I think that she could take a set off of her. I don't know if it's going to be the first or the second. I'm going to feel the vibe of the match. If she comes out with that serve smoking, Mira's in trouble because Mira doesn't hold her serve well. The problem with Leisha is, can she stay steady from the back court? Because if she can stay steady from the baseline, she can play with anybody because she's a really strong power hitter. But her problem is errors, man. She just way too many errors, but really good server, really physical player that can blow Andreeva off the court if she's on game. So Andreeva should be very careful this evening facing a hot Leisha Parks.
All right, let's keep it moving because college football, I don't know why they call it week zero, but we're in week one, even though we all watched college football last weekend.
It is so stupid. It's so disrespectful to the teams playing, man.
Right. But here, we'll stick with what the NCAA tells us because we all know how well that works out when you listen to the NCAA.
Right.
What's your favorite game this weekend, five-star? I mean, obviously, you know, for me, I'll start, and I'll just take the easy one. Texas and Ohio State. Yeah. You know, both teams have a chance to be a national champion, and Ohio State's defending their championship. But let's see how they look. We know with these teams, I mean, how many of these guys did we see on the first day of the NFL draft? You know, we got what, Matthew Golden, Isaiah Bond, although he didn't get drafted, right? But he's on the Browns now. Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, multiple linemen from both schools went in the first round. So these teams, you know, they're going to have to take some time. Obviously, we know, especially with the way the NIL works, and I was thinking it was going to make things more even. It's actually been the opposite. It's made things less even. These teams are stacked, but how fast are they going to reintegrate these new players as they're upgraded? And, of course, you know, we talk about Shador, right, and we're getting the opposite with Arch. Arch can do no wrong. So let's see if he can prove it on the field, though, because we've seen this before. You know, if that team is 6-6 this year, everybody's going to turn on him. But regardless, hey, I'm rooting for him. Like I said, I want there to be more good quarterbacks than bad. I'd love to see him have a great game. And that's the game I'm most interested in watching this weekend. To be fair, it was kind of a cheap answer because I picked number one versus number three. Which game are you looking forward to the most?
I'm glad that you said it because I'm sure that most people in the chat, y'all hit that like button if you're rocking with the Wagering World right now, five-star in Vegas. Spread us there. Follow us both on X, DMs. If you have any questions about Wagering, man, if we got time, we'd love to get with you. We like to take care of our community, man. We're here to make everybody better, sports betters. Everyone will be tuned in to that game, and I can't wait. I don't know if I'm going to give it out. I'll give it to you. Me and Ski already talked about it. I'm hammering that game. I already got a clear decision and choice on that one, but it's going to be very entertaining. My thing with Arch Manning is this. A lot of pressure on the kid. Everyone wants him to do well. Everyone is saying he's the greatest quarterback prospect ever. They're treating him like a young Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck delivered. Let's hope that young Arch does. He's from Louisiana. He's a cool kid. I like everything about him. I like his dad. His dad is actually my favorite Manning brother, you know. So that's the thing about Arch is he got his dad's personality, man. He has a whole lot of, you know, fun in him. He likes to cut up a little bit. He's not afraid of the hood. He's going to go kick it in the hood. He's going to, you know, kick it with the brothers and rap and dance. He's a cool kid, man. I just hope that he's able to handle this pressure because last year, he did not look good in the passing game to me. And no one's going to tell me the kind of guy that you and I know Steve Sarkisian is, that he loves Quinn Ewers so much that if they have a
Did we lose five-star real quick, or is that me that dumped off? If it is five-star, I'll keep going. Chat, help me out real quick. Are you guys hearing me? Spread a stare. If not, we'll get five-star in here real soon. And I'll continue to talk about this weekend's game. So he was breaking down Arch Manning. And, I mean, I'll be honest, I kind of have an idea of where he's going to go. Okay. So yeah, you guys still got me. The other ones that we were choosing from, there's two other ranked games. And that is LSU versus Clemson. I'm going to love to hear what he thinks of that. Right. And right now I see that game lined at 3.5. The game's lined at 3.5. And boy, you always want to lay the 3.5 in my book. That 3.5 seems to me like they're begging me to take LSU. I think I'm probably going to lay it with Clemson. However, I'm not necessarily sure if we should do that. And, you know, Five-Star loves LSU, so, you know, he'll have a good idea of whether or not that's the right play. But right now I feel like the books want me to take the hook with LSU. Maybe Clemson is the play there. And then, of course, another one I'm excited about, you know, a guy my age, and I hope that you guys, you know, some of you guys that are my age too, will remember this, right? Catholics versus convicts. Catholics versus convicts. I am down. We got Notre Dame taking on Miami. Five-star, I think you switched to your phone real quick, and I can't hear you. I see your lips moving. We got no audio there. No audio. I got no audio for you, Five-star. Let me see if it's on my end. No. Five-star, jump in and jump out. I got no audio right now. Yeah, I'll have to text him real quick. We got no audio there. But Notre Dame is taking on Miami. That's an old school rivalry. But what's awesome is it's not just us clinging on to the past. This is the number 6 team taking on the number 10 team. Check, check, check. We good?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we good now.
All right, sorry.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
All good.
My son's phone I'm using, right, to do the show. Remember I told you this shit happened last time?
Yeah.
For some reason it's saying the temperature gets hot. And when it does that, it just cuts completely off. And I don't know where the temperature's coming from. So
it's because you're in Las Vegas. That happens to me in my car too. I'll be driving, man. And the phone will cut out if I put it directly in the sun.
Sorry about that, guys. If it cuts out again, I'm going to just switch devices so it won't happen again. Let's try to rock it out and finish and make sure that it doesn't. But as I was saying, it's not like Steve Sarkisian is such a great guy. That he's going to say, you know what, I'm going to pass winning on a national championship this year and sit the better player at quarterback just because I promised old Quinn that this is his job. Yeah, right. Like, Arch wasn't ready last year, man. And if he wasn't ready last year, what makes anyone think that suddenly he's going to be ready this year without being inside of the fire, man? You got to get in the fire. You got to get your beak wet before you're ready to actually perform at this level. And this is his first time being the guy, being the QB1, the first time being the one that's going to be leading this team, and they're going to Ohio State. I don't know, man. I think this is going to be a tough one. And people
are doing. I told them, I know you didn't give out the pick, but I had a pretty good idea of where you're going. Real quick, I talked about, is this going to be a trap here? And, you know, we can go over these games more later in the week. But the other two games I was choosing for from this question, the question was, which game are you most looking forward to this weekend? Man, are they begging me to take LSU? -3.5, that usually means lay it with the favorite. What's your read on that game real quick?
Well, you know, that's the game I actually was looking forward to the most. You know that I'm not a fan that's so delusional that I won't fade a team that I like, because at the end of the day, I want to win money, and me being able to take care of my family and us continuing to eat steak spread is more important to me than if these guys lose a game and then they go right back home and jump in the Escalades provided by the NIL. So when I say I'm a fan of the team, don't get it confused with me being impartial. Like, I'm still going to tell the truth about this game. And this game, if it was, put it like this, if it was in a neutral site, then I would really, really, really like LSU. But the problem that we're dealing with is Brian Kelly, man. Brian Kelly is horrible in the first game of the year. How many years straight have we lost
to LSU? That's true.
On this show in the first game of the year? Like, one time they were in the Superdome. You know, they were playing Florida State with a clearly better team, and they lost, you know. And Florida State ended up riding it momentum and having a pretty decent year that year as well. But I just think that Clemson has had a lot of trouble in the past with the SEC, and I think that's going to continue this year. You remember last week I talked about Kate Klubnik, is one of those guys who's he can play. he has all these records, you know, that he set in Austin. He went to a powerhouse school there that has some of the greatest quarterback alumni you want to name. He went to the same school as Nick Foles and I believe Baker Mayfield and a bunch of more guys. But the thing is, Sam Ellinger went there as well. The thing is, though, is now this is a different stage, and he's never popped off the screen to me in a way that would make me say he could take over a game against this LSU defense. The LSU defense is stacked. You know, Harold Perkins is back after sitting out all year. He's ready and prepared to show why he should be the first rushing in taking off the board. And he's so versatile because he actually started as a linebacker, much like LeVar Arrington. He's a guy that could play inside, much like the kid from the Cowboys, Micah Parsons. He started out as a middle linebacker, but with the speed and his ability to get around the edge, he also plays defensive end. So he's a special player, man. And I think the LSU finally gets it done in the, you know, first of the year this year. They're getting 3.5. I'll be on the Tigers most likely on this game, money line. I just think the LSU is in a different class than Clemson, man. And we've seen in the past with Clemson, they really, really took their tails against SEC teams for some reason, man. Last year, Klubnik faced two SEC teams, lost to both. They lost to South Carolina, who were a middle-of-the-pack SEC team. He only put 14 points up against them. And then they also, the last two times when they played Georgia, he didn't even score a touchdown. And before that, they played Alabama, he didn't score a touchdown. So I don't see that changing this year. I still think that the ACC is behind the SEC when it comes to talent, man. So I would definitely lean toward my LSU Tigers on that one. Who else were you about to ask?
The last game that I almost chose for this question, five-star, old school rivalry. Convicts versus Catholics, 6-10. Notre Dame taking on Miami. Notre Dame laying points on the road. You got any thoughts on that one? Are you making an early bet, or are we going to wait a little bit before we get involved there?
I got to wait a little bit, but honestly, I would lean Miami. The reason I can't say that I'm going to take Miami, and you know why, is because they're coach. Yeah. I just don't think Cristobal is a good in-game coach, man. I don't think he hires good assistants either. So it makes it where you get in situations like that game he blew against Georgia Tech. Was that last year? Year before last, where they just got to run the ball out and take a knee and end up losing the game? You know, yeah. So I just – Cristobal, to me, he worked against Cam Ward last year. Like every time Cam Ward would do something great and get them in a position to win, Cristobal would drop the ball and do something silly. And put the other team back into the game again. And that's what I worry about, because we both know that Notre Dame has one of the best young head coaches in football. He's not going to drop the ball during the game. He's going to make the right decisions, put them in a situation to win. I know they're going to run the ball out with Reggie Love. So if Miami can somehow slow down that running attack for Notre Dame, I think they'll be okay, because we don't know much about the Irish's quarterback, man. Notre Dame's quarterback, this is his first time getting any action. Either one that they go with, they have two options, and neither one of them were highly recruited. We don't know a lot about either one of them. I think I think his name, Michi, is the one who's going to end up starting for Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken. Still information coming in, but we know we got Carson Beck over there from Miami. Can he do what Cam Ward did and kind of revitalize his career and put himself back up there? Remember, before the year started last year, it was talked about whether the number one was going to be Carson Beck or Shedeur Sanders. And now Shedeur doesn't go into the fifth round, and Carson Beck smartly comes back. And now he's over here with his – he flew his private jet to Miami and parked it. So we'll see if he can play a little bit better now, man. Down there in Coral Gables, he obviously couldn't deal with the pressure of the SEC and the pressure of being a Georgia quarterback. He'll be a little bit looser, but – Notre Dame, how do they score? Because unless they can get some big runs off, they got nice receivers, but I just haven't seen their quarterback. And until I see their quarterback, I can't make a play on it. But I do say that they have a huge coaching advantage for sure with Notre Dame over Miami.
Hey, real quick, let me go off script real quick, because it just kind of reminded me we had a little clash of high school football that was similar up in here. Not necessarily Convicts versus Catholics, but it was definitely suburbs versus hood. And that was when Folsom High School took on Grant High School. It was on ESPN on Saturday night. Did you get a chance to check that out at all?
No, I wish you had texted me and told me about
so
it.
Here's the deal. Obviously, the tape is out there, though, and I just need to know what you think. This Folsom quarterback is supposed to be the best quarterback that came out of Folsom since Jake Browning. I think Jake Browning had all the talent in the world. From everything I've heard, he just didn't work with it. But I want to get your idea here about this guy. So just when you get a chance, I'm sure you'll have access to see him because he's going to be a top quarterback recruit going into college next year. But I want to know what you think. The Folsom High School quarterback. And I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I know he's the best prospect that we've seen here in Northern California for a while.
Is Folsom the convicts or the
Folsom's the suburbs. That's the white boys. And Grant's had Ontario Smith. I think Shaq Thompson went there.
Okay.
Almost any Sacramento player that came out of Sacramento went to Grant High School. So, nice. so they put a successful pipeline to the NFL. They've been a top team even 30 years ago when I was in high school. So they've consistently had a good football program there, and it's everything the sports should be there, where they're taking kids that may not be in the best environment, and they're using sports to get them on the right path. So I'm a big supporter of Grant High School. But I'm curious to what you think of this quarterback there in Folsom. So we'll come back on that one a little later this year when you get a chance to see some of his tape. Because I think that I won't be the only one that talks to you about it. Let's move to the future, though. And I'm going to let you take over real quick. I'm going to run real quick. But I want to hear your breakdown. A good thing I got these Bluetooth now. I can hear what you're saying. Let's break down the what are we doing? Big 12 here today?
Yeah, Big 12.
Let's do the Big 12 and let me know who you like to win. I see you got a nice pick with the juicy payout. Break down the Big 12 for us real quick.
Big 12 is one of the best conferences, most entertaining conferences to follow. And the reason why is because you never know who's going to win it. And you got all these teams that play with so many different styles, so many varieties. You got teams like Texas Tech who spent a gazillion dollars because now they have this rich guy who used to play football for them that's a billionaire. And you got Patrick Mahomes, and we know what type of sponsorship that he's going to bring to the table. And they have all these new guys that they paid and transferred in. And you know Texas Tech is known for throwing it around. Then you got teams like Iowa State that we just won some money with on Saturday playing old school style of football where it's defense first. We try to run the ball. We run, smart plays. We play to our defense and our special teams. You got other teams like Colorado with Coach Prime, and they're a flashy team. They like to get up and down the field throwing the ball, but actually this year they're going to be more defensive-oriented as he's strengthening the defense on that team. And I've followed Coach Prime's whole coaching career, and what people don't understand because Shador and because Travis Hunter is that he's actually a defensive coach. He's a defensive coach first. He was a defensive player, one of the greatest defensive players of our lifetime. And for sure, I say the undisputed number one lockdown cornerback ever. So he loves defense. He loves getting after guys. Him and his boy Warren Sapp are doing a really good job of getting that defense turned around. And I think we're going to see a lot better defensive play from that Colorado team. And that he'll make that team will make the jump like Coach Prime's Jackson State team did, where they went from being one of the lower bottom teams with just not enough talent his first year there to being one of the best defenses in the nation. There's so much variety with this conference. Then you got Arizona State. Arizona State is returning their starting quarterback, who I like a lot, and Sam Levitt. He used to be at Michigan State. He transferred. They also have two other preseason All-Americans. Jordan Tyson is a really good receiver. He'll be playing on Sundays. And then they have a safety, Xavion Alford, who's a real playmaker. He'll definitely be playing on Sundays as well. I'm a big fan of their coach. He was the OC for Oregon before coming over there. This is his alma mater, young guy, and he brings a lot of energy to the team. They do have a really tough schedule, though, because they have to play Mississippi State, Texas State, who people don't understand is a really good team this year, Baylor, TCU, Utah, Texas Tech, and Iowa State all in division. So they don't have an easy route. A lot of people like Baylor this year. Shout out to my boy Doc, Christopher Laverne, man. If you guys ever got any heart issues or anyone in your family's dealing with any heart issues, he's out in the Woodlands. Good friend of mine. He's a Baylor alumni, and he's a Baylor man through and through. And he keeps me tapped in on what's going on with that team. And does Dave Aranda get on the hot seat this year? You know, he's kind of getting a pass. He was the hottest name coming in when he left LSU as a defensive coordinator. I wanted him to be the LSU coach when we got Brian Kelly. Instead, he goes to Baylor. He's been there for a few years now. He's been missing a quarterback. Everyone thinks he has found him in Sawyer Robertson. I have to see a little bit more of him before I make that decision, but they are a talented team. What's going on with BYU? We know BYU is well-coached. I've always been a fan of their coach. He has them ready to play. They're very physical, and they spend a lot of money. It's a whole lot of wealth that's flowing through the BYU program in basketball and football right now. They want to be good. They want to win, and their alumni is pumping the money in to get that done. Who's going to be their quarterback? I know you guys have heard about what happened with Jack Breslaff, who ended up leaving the team. You heard about that, right, Spread, about he got caught having sex?
No, on BYU?
Yeah, the starting quarterback got caught in a sexual relationship or something. And, you know, in their school, that's like you get kicked out of school for it.
Me and my buddy were talking about one of the top prospects, another quarterback prospect coming out of Northern California is going to go to BYU. It might even be the guy that I'm talking about, the Folsom guy. Yeah, and he's going to skip a year to go do his. He's going to skip a year to go do his thing, and I think in basketball you could get away with that. I don't know enough about baseball to know if you can, but I've seen so many players, and I go back to Maurice Claret, who may not have been the next O.J. Simpson, but he was going to be a fine player, and I think that year off really hurt him. And there was another player that year, you might remember his name. He was a receiver that also skipped one year and he went to Ohio State.
He went to Michigan State.
Anyways, you understand the point, right?
Big tall receiver from Michigan State. That's what you're talking
about. Had solid careers, but they skipped that year because they got in that lawsuit with the NFL or whatever. They lost and they had to sit out a year. And I just think it negatively affected their careers. Now, this isn't going from college to pros, but just give the Mormons a bunch of money when you make it to the NFL, right? So we'll see what happens.
But the thing about that is that's a hard school to go to, and they got the number one guy in college basketball this year, too. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep that, you know, I guess if it doesn't become public, it's okay, because it's no way that they can expect in these times, especially and how sexualized the world and the country is, that these kids are going to be.
And I think BYU changed their rules. You can't tell me Jim McMahon was a virgin entering the NFL.
They just come on. Back then, we didnn't have.
Because back then, it was way easier to keep things under wraps. Now you got a video.
Steve Young was. He seems like an upright fella.
Yeah, but Jim McMahon's my guy at the youth. There's no. I guarantee he was drinking. Maybe not smoking, but he was definitely drinking and partying with some co-eds there.
Well, I'm seeing that now, looking at the depth chart, it looks like this can't be right. It's BYU starting quarterback is some guy, Bear Backmire, and they say he's going to wear number 47. So I don't know if his brother is the Backmire who played at Boise State and bounced all around. I think he was at West Virginia last year or somewhere. He's one of those guys who play like 10,000 schools. You know how they do now. They play until like 28. So I don't know. So Bear Backmire, I'm going to have to do some research on him, guys, before I could tell you if BYU is going to stir it up. But I do really think they have a super, super solid coach in Kalani Sitake. He's a really good coach, man. He's another one that he could be an NFL guy or at least a coordinator, I believe, just with his approach to the game. You got other teams just right there as well, like Cincinnati. They got their quarterback again, and Brendan Sorsby. You know what kind of coach that they have over there, former Ohio State coach. He's a defensive-minded guy. Colorado, can they be the same without Shedeur at quarterback, without Travis Hunter there? As I was saying while you were gone, is that they're going to be a more defensive-minded team. Yeah, but they do have two outstanding quarterbacks. Caden Salter, who won us a lot of money at Liberty 2 years ago, and last year he started bidding against himself. But in prime season, he's doing that. He'll be on the bench very fast, because last year at Liberty, bro, he was throwing some games. But he can play when he want to play. So he's from the Dallas area, originally was recruited to Tennessee, And then you got Julian Lewis, who's one of the top recruits coming out. Juju Lewis is going to be a baller, man. And I don't know if he's going to be the guy. I think that Prime makes him sit this year behind Salter and let Salter be the head guy, the starting quarterback. But I expect that Colorado is going to surprise some people and be a little bit better than they think they are going to be. Houston, another one to watch for. Willie Fritz is a super good coach. Came up from Tulane. He's an OG. He had to revamp the way he does things because at Tulane, he was originally a guy who liked to run the option and things like that. He's opened up the offense a little bit more with Houston. You know that Houston is going to always have great recruits because this is just one of the best recruiting grounds in the whole world right there in the Houston area. Got Connor Wigman, who was a Houston guy from out in the area where my little brother's from, 290. You know, remember we talked about him last year, and him, how we talk about just people and their innate biases. This guy, you remember they were giving him hell because when he was talking in the locker room, they said he was trying to sound like he was a black guy or whatever. Remember that, Connor Wigman? Well, now mm-hmm. he's with University of Houston, and he'll be leading that team, bring some, you know, consistency to that quarterback position. Kansas, we saw them. They looked pretty good the other day. I got smacked on it because I don't know why the hell I trusted E.J. Warner thinking that because his dad was a Hall of Famer that he had changed or got better because he's been terrible every stop that he's made, whether it was at Temple or Rice, and he's still bad. And so Fresno got blew out. But Kansas' offense looks really potent. Jalen Daniels is a really good quarterback. He's been there forever. I think this is a six-year starting the quarterback for them. He got injured twice or something within this long stretch of being a quarterback, but he could spin it. And they looked really potent on offense. I'm a big Lance Leipold guy, as you know, so they looked good as well. We talked about Kansas State. Avery Johnson is a really good quarterback. Really some embarrassing stuff out of him and his family after the game, after he lost. His dad and brother were fighting outside of the game, all on the ground, rolling around like wrestlers. So I hope that they got that stuff together over there. But Chris Klieman, he's a good coach, but I think that he got a lot more love than he should have because the advantages that he had at North Dakota State. North Dakota State is heads and shoulders above most teams in that division, and he kind of piggybacked what had already been going there and kept it going, and that ended up where he got the job at Kansas State. Can Mike Gundy bounce back? I don't know. He lost a lot, man. We'll see. TCU, everyone loves their quarterback, Josh Hoover. I'm not that big of a fan of him. I think that he turns the ball over a little bit risky with the ball for me. They do have a solid head coach, has taken the team to the national title game, but that was before everyone had expectations for the program. Now it's a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure on that program. Can they step up and get back to the playoffs again? I know you heard me talk about Texas Tech. Texas Tech is just a money machine now. We're going to see if they can buy their way to a championship. UCF, we got second time around over there. It's, Scott Frost tries to come back and work his miracles again with that team. They do have a good quarterback over there, Taven Jackson, who came over from Indiana. Utah is my team, though, that I'm taking to win it all. I think that they can win the Big 12. I think the price at plus 550 is ridiculously great. Devon Dampier is my guy. The same way I talked about Cam Ward, the same way I talked about Jaden Daniels, I feel about Devon Dampier, 6'3", a lot of speed, a lot of strength. Throws a beautiful ball, great anticipation. I think that him with Kyle Whittingham is problems for the Big 12 because we know that Utah is already a really rugged team. They have a lot of stars coming back on defense, solid offensive line coming back, new guys at the receiver and running back, but that's something that you could replace, man. So their main thing was they were missing a quarterback because, you know, they had the kid who had been over there like 8 years as the quarterback and kept getting hurt. So let's go with Utah at plus 550 to win the Big 12. I don't think either any team in the Big 12 has a chance of winning the national title. I think that one, at the most two of them, will get in the college football playoffs. But it's a very fun league and one to watch. The last team I didn't speak about was West Virginia. That's Rich Rodriguez is back there, just like Scott Foster came back. So just a lot of parity. Big old league, man. 16 teams in this league, man. A lot of fun, a lot of different styles and stuff. So we'll be fighting the Big 12 all year, but I'll be taking Utah at plus 550 to win it.
All right. And, you know, I'm rooting for you. You know, I talked about Sacramento High School football earlier, and it seems like every year one of our top high school players ends up at Utah. So I'm always finds like I'm rooting for them anyways. But this year I'll have a little financial incentive as well. All right. Let's switch gears. Let's move on to the NFL. Are we going to talk about the division with your former favorite team?
Former. You got
the NFC South. Talk to me about the Saints real quick, and then we're going to go ahead and break down and give us our division winners. But, you know, hey, it must have been a lot. You know, I know you've loved that team for as long as I've known you. What was the final straw in just becoming full-on Texans fan?
What happened initially that really upset me about this team was them getting Derek Carr. Them getting Derek Carr was like, what the hell are you doing? We already know you're going to invest that much money in Derek Carr. You don't know.
And I think that's the problem with Carr is the amount that he's paid. And that happens to so many NBA players too. Like Tobias Harris was a fine basketball player, but he wasn't a max player. So everybody hated him. If he was a $10 million a year player, we would have been fine. Same with Derek Carr. If he only took up $10 million in cap space, I'm sure you'd been fine with it. But he was paid like he was Mahomes, Allen, right? I mean, he's up there. He's right up there with the top quarterbacks in the league. And I agree with you there. That was a tough decision. The NFL managing your salary cap so important. And you can't give the way that he's played that kind of money. He'd never been the same guy after that injury.
No.
In 2016, I thought he was going to be so good as a rookie. I thought we had a top five guy. And he came back and he's had happy feet ever since.
Well, I knew that the city of New Orleans was going to make him quit football because guys take football serious. Like, they're already talking about it now. Like, man, the Saints are going to be so bad this year, the murder rate is going to go up. And that's a sad thing, but it's an actual thing. The murder rate goes up when the Saints are bad, when they're bad in football, man. And this year, I don't expect much at all from this team, man. And it's one of the most loyal fan bases. Guys like me who go back to when they were wearing paper bags, you know, in the stands, and then Jim Morrow comes in and gives them some type of, you know, makes them a more consistent team, a more real NFL team, but he never wins a playoff game either. They don't win a playoff game until Jim Haslett comes in and Aaron Brooks many years later, as good as Bobby Hebert was and Dalton Hilliard and all those guys, they couldn't win a playoff game. The Dome Patrol, rest in peace, Sam Mills, Hall of Fame linebacker Ricky Jackson, Pat Swillen, just an awesome team, man. Vaughn Johnson. I'm a diehard Saints fan. Some Saints guys who are mad at me, because I said that I was giving away my membership as a Who Dat fan. But if you follow me enough, you know I don't like BS, and it's just a bunch of BS going on over there, man. That's why I think Sean Payton left. He was covering up a lot of nonsense over there. You know, Mickey Loomis, not that good of a GM. And it was Sean Payton was in there kind of controlling things and nudging him and getting the players that he wanted. And Mickey Loomis lucked out when Mr. Benson was still alive and Tom Benson went and Payton got Sean Payton. And they were able to get Drew Brees because Drew Brees ended up failing his physical with Miami, or it'd be a different story because Nick Saban would have had Drew Brees, and now Miami probably would have won the Super Bowl within that time, and the Saints probably would have stayed in the, you know, bottom of the league. The thing that lifted us up was Sean Payton and Drew Brees, and they're going to be felt. Them leaving are going to be felt forever. Both men will have statues in front of the Superdome one day. So I don't expect much from the Saints. I kind of think what it is that Miss Gail Benson, was Tom Benson's. Benson's daughter, I believe. The thing that she's going to do is try to crash all the way out and get Arch Manning. That's what they're trying to do. Like, it's no doubt about it. They're not trying to hide it. Look at the roster. who drafts Tyler Shuff as their quarterback and wants to win? Like, this guy was horrible in college. You know, so if you're trying to feed me one thing and tell me that it's another, but we can smell what it really is, you know, so that's the thing I don't like about the Saints. Just go ahead and say we're in a rebuild. You know, you're doing the same thing the Sixers are doing. You're just doing the football version. They're going to throw Spencer Rattler out there and hope that he fails. I don't know how long Alvin Kamara stays there. He was buddying up a lot to Sean Payton. He's probably trying to get over there to Denver with him and try to, you know, do some numbers again. But I don't expect him to – if he makes it through this season, it'll be his last because he's just wasting time over there with the Saints right now. because the Saints are in a complete rebuild. That's Tyrann Mathieu, as you see, he retires this year. And so it's a bleak, really bleak for the Saints. And I'm not a fair weather fan. I've been a Saints fan over 30 years, man. And I went through the good and the bad with this team. But now it's got to the point when you're doing stuff like they did by passing Shador all of those times when they know they needed another quarterback in the building, where now it's like you guys aren't caring at all about what your fans want and trying to make your fans happy and try to put in a guy that's going to bring a spark to the city. So let me step back and concentrate on a team who does care about their fans and trying to do the things that's going to make it where they get a championship. And that's the Houston Texans, by hiring the head coach that they hired, D'Amico Ryans, by the two draft picks that they took 2 years ago, and by all the moves they made in free agency. I respect everything that's going over there with the Texans. Great GM, great ownership. So go Texans.
All right. And definitely like the way that your team is turning out there. But we'll talk about the AFC South on a different day. Let's continue with the NFC South. I want to talk to you about the Carolina Panthers, because to me, this is a two-team race between the Falcons and the Buccaneers, and we'll break that down in this preview. But I'm looking at Carolina Panthers right now, over 6.5 wins, and I'm torn because I like Bryce Young.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to think of Dave Canales, but I'm just not sure about the rest of this roster here. And I know that they've improved. I'm just wondering if it's enough. Bryce Young was hailed as, you know, the worst number one draft pick of all time. They bench him for 2 days, and now all of a sudden he's fine. It just shows you how quick we are to overreact in this new world. No patience. We scroll, you know, quick hit of dopamine every 5 seconds on our feed, and now we expect these rookies to come in and be world beaters right off the bat. I mean, there's a reason when you and I were growing up, rookies didn't even play, even if you were first round top pick. So, you know, I'm glad to see Bryce Young get back on his feet. But what are your expectations for the Carolina Panthers this season? I mean, I won't be surprised if they're the, you know, surprise team that jumps up into second place of this division. I won't be surprised if they struggle again, even if Bryce Young has a good year, because I'm just not sure about the rest of this team, especially the defense.
Well, when I look at their schedule, man, I'm going to be honest, I don't see 6.5 wins. I don't see it. Like, I don't see 6.5 wins. I see them beating the Saints one time. I see them maybe beating the Seahawks late in the season. And that's about it, man. I think they're going to struggle immensely again this season. And I think there's going to be more pressure on Bryce Young. I don't know if Dave Canales can coach or not, but he better can, because they're going to need a lot. Bryce isn't a bad quarterback. It's just that he's a young guy and they're still building around him. You know, and he's going to need a lot around him to be successful, as all young quarterbacks do. And I don't think that they have enough roster talent right now to be taken seriously. I'd go under 6.5 wins for sure. I might bet it.
Two-man race between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. In my mind, this is the NFL, so anything can happen, especially the way these injuries pan out. But let's just continue this discussion under that assumption. Right now, the Buccaneers, I'm seeing offshore at about -115. Falcons as high as +190 if you shop around. And when we talk about two teams having equal ideas in my mind, because I'll tell you what, man, I'm so high on Michael Penix. I'm so excited that they finally gave him the team. And maybe they were right. You know, I was a little disappointed with that old Cousins deal. Maybe they were right to let him sit for 10 or 12, come in. He's already got a rapport with Drake London. You know, I think Bijan Robinson is going to be fantastic. The team's finally addressed their defense through the draft. Let's see if these guys panned out. But it was good to see them not just waste another top pick on a tight end or a skill position player or something when they already have a fairly dynamic offense and at least an average offensive line. The real problem for that team was defense last year, and it forced them into a lot of situations where they have this talented running back in Bijan Robinson, but you're down by 10. You're down by 14, you're down by 17. You can't necessarily utilize him and the play action as much. So do you think Atlanta did enough to overtake the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? And how do you see the Buccaneers here coming into this season? I know that I'm a little higher on Todd Bowles than you. Buccaneers are sitting at 9.5 win total. Falcons, you can get at a 7.5.
I like the Falcons a lot this year, man. And you said the main reason. You know, I'm a Michael Penix guy. Like, he's one of those guys I was talking about in college. Outstanding player. And what people don't realize about him is that he used to be a dual threat guy, tore both his knees up once, I believe, in senior, maybe in high school in Florida, and then again in Indiana. And then he follows Caleb DeBoer, who was his offensive coordinator in Indiana, to Washington, and doesn't look back, you know, becomes a pocket guy, throws complete dimes all over the field. It's nowhere that he can't put the ball on the field. And it's going to open up that offense completely because they have weapons. Maybe the best running back in the league. You got to say he's a top three running back already, is Bijan Robinson, just for his versatility. He's a little bit souped up, faster version, in my opinion, of LaDainian Tomlinson, but a lot of the same skill sets that LaDainian Tomlinson brought, where he can throw the ball, he can catch the ball, he can run the ball, he can block. He's just a football player, and he's really good. Kyle Pitts has not blossomed yet. Michael Penix has made it his business in the offseason to let people know it's going to be a new day with him at quarterback. You know, and they're saying that Kyle Pitts is going to have a career year this year. And I can believe it because we know he has the talent. He was coming out, they were saying he was one of the best prospects at tight end ever, and he hasn't done much. And I don't think that that's all on him. I think that a lot of that has to do with the coaching that he was having over there under Arthur Smith, who one of those guys who, if he gets to, you know, he doesn't like you, he's going to phase you out of the game plan. Darnell Mooney had a quietly really good game, good season for them last year. He's a really good slot receiver, good number two option. Drake London is about to be, as long as he doesn't get injured, you know, and he has good health, I think he'll be a Pro Bowler this year. I think he's a fantasy guy you want to definitely look at when you got Michael Penix pulling the trigger over there for them. Defensively, they're solid. I like their corners a lot. D. Alford is also a good nickelback, but I really like Terrell. Terrell is a really good player. Under the radar, people don't know about him a lot, but he could play. Now, can they get any kind of rush? They picked up Leonard Floyd. Does he still have something to tank? Caden Ellis is a really, really good linebacker that a lot of people don't know about, but they also drafted Jalon Walker, who they expect a lot out of, the former Georgia Bulldog. They're another one of those teams that has a coach that has to prove himself to me, because Raheem Morris cost them maybe two or three games last year with just clock management. So he has to tighten that up, maybe get a guy who's just their only thing is about worrying about the time and the, you know, game management that's in his ear. That'll help him out because he tends to concentrate on defense. But now you're not a DC. You're not the defensive coordinator anymore, man. You got to think about the big picture. And sometimes he was getting caught up in the moment. And he also is pretty daring, doing some of the Brandon Staley stuff. And, you know, sometimes you got to kick the damn extra point, Raheem. He was doing, you know, a little bit of going for it a little bit too much. But I think out of all the teams in that division, I think they're the most talented. But I do think that Tampa Bay is the most solid. As you said, you're a little bit higher on Todd Bowles than I am. Todd Bowles, no matter what you say about him, he's had success. He's been a Super Bowl winner as a coordinator with Tampa Bay, and he's also been a Super Bowl winner as a player with Washington. So he knows what success looks like. Still a really good defense over there. Still has Jamal Dean, who's a good cornerback. One of my favorite players in the league that I wanted drafted to any of my teams out of college. No one was talking about Antoine Winfield Jr. He's a baller. He's big in that defense. When he's healthy, they tend to play better. He still has Vita Vea over there on defense. Offense, he pretty much just gives that show to Baker Mayfield and to Mike Evans and let those guys do their thing. Jalen McMillan is still there. They re-signed Chris Godwin, which was a good thing. A lot of people were worried that he was going to not get his deal because, you know, the injury that happened late in the year last year. Amika Egbuka, he's going to put that offense over the top and make it even more dangerous because he's a guy that's ready to walk into the NFL and contribute right now. So a lot of weapons for Baker Mayfield. Bucky Irvin and Rashad White is a really underrated backfield, both really talented running backs. Bucky Irvin is lightning quick, tough as nails, was really good at Oregon. Rashad White came out of Arizona State, one of the taller running backs we've seen. He's like a glider, can catch the ball, can block, really versatile, about 6'2". They're a really good combination. And then Sean Tucker that they have from Syracuse is a really good running back too. So Tampa Bay is set up to have a really good season as well. It'll come down to those two teams.
All right. Well, I'm going to take kind of a similar approach here. When we're looking at these odds, right, and I can make a good case for either Atlanta or Tampa Bay, I got to take Atlanta at the plus 90. I'm not going to go too heavy on that one, though.
Yeah.
What I really like is just the over 7.5. That's way too low, especially when you're looking at the division. And I feel like this line was set based on the idea that Carolina would be who they were in those last three games of the season. And we've seen this before where teams finish strong, yet they're not that talented, and they kind of regress to the mean. And I think that, you know, Tet McMillan was a fine draft pick, and I'm sure he's going to make an impact for Bryce Young. But how long is that going to take for them to gain chemistry? I just don't know if Xavier Leggett's ever going to be really, you know, an above-average NFL-caliber wide receiver. So we're going to rely on Adam Thielen again. I'm not too excited about that. And, hey, you know, Rico Dowdle's fine, but that offensive line is so subpar to me, and I don't know if I necessarily believe in that defense. I mean, that could be two easy wins right there.
Yeah.
We go to the Saints. And even if, because it's a rivalry and they hate each other, and that'll probably be the Saints Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to, you know, it doesn't matter if they're trying to get Arch Manning, they're going to go all out on those two games. So they split those two, right? But I've already got three right there. I only need 14 more.
The Saints are going to beat Atlanta this year.
Yeah, they might not. But I'm just saying, even if I put them down for a split, I've got three wins just off those two teams. And, you know, I just think that number is too low. So my larger bet's just going to be on the over 7.5 games on the win total.
Yeah, and you know, I took the Falcons at plus 200. I got it before it went down to 190. It's just too juicy, man. You got it. Yeah. I got to try that because it's not a big difference between either teams. It's just who's going to be better when it counts, Michael Penix Jr. or Baker Mayfield. We've seen both perform at high levels and high.
And Tampa's got a lot of wear and tear, man. Godwin's not going to be good right off the bat. Mike Evans, I mean, I'm not going to bet against him, but one year it's got to stop, right? I mean, it's almost like the meme from Breaking Bad. He can't keep getting away with this. I mean, he's
from Galveston, Big Mike.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite – me and my buddy were so pissed when the Raiders didn't draft him. I mean, we could see that one from a mile away. You could see he was – it just jumped off. He was an NFL talent.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just – this team is old. I mean, Vita Vea, one of my favorite players. I remember sending my buddies, like, on my little draft board. I put him at number one that year. I knew he was going to be – of course, the NFL and defensive line means so much, but he's getting older as well. A lot of these key pieces are a little older, including Tristan Wirfs, the offensive lineman, who's been a little injury prone as well. So when you take all these factors into, if they were even money, if the books put them at the same price, they're both plus 125. Okay, I'll take Tampa, but I'm not laying money with Tampa. I'm taking the plus 190 there, and I still think that price is good. I know you got a slightly better price, but I still think the plus 190 is good, but I'm going larger on the over 7.5.
All right. Let's get the people what they want, Spirit.
All right. It's time. It's the ball and parlay. Let you start there. What do you got for the people here?
You know, it's tennis time, man. We'll get to the football on the weekend. A lot of good games on Thursday. So on the Wednesday show, I'll give out a couple plays on the football. If you are interested in joining my private football group, my private tennis group, or getting all of the plays, feel free to DM me. I'm not cheap, but you will see the results, man. And I look forward to working with guys who are in this wagering world community. You know, it's always over here. It's about all about our quality over quantity. We really appreciate all of the guys who tap in. A lot of high intelligent bettors that tune into the wagering world, and we appreciate you guys. And if you ever want to get into the private group places, we leading to a long football season, let me know. Let's get on the winning side of things. The tennis plays I'm giving, I already played first set on Sanmez at plus 120. She's going against Valenets. I don't think that much of Katie Valenets, but I took Sanmez plus 120 first set on that one, as well as the match at plus 138. If you guys want to go live right now, let's see what is she right now. I just was looking at the match. Okay, she's live right now at, well, it's minus 120. They're at Deuce. in game three with Samez up 2-1. I'd wait a second. If she doesn't break Valenitz right here, I'd jump in, because if she doesn't get her this game, she's going to get her sooner or later. I think Samez is one of those type of players that plays with a lot of energy. I think Katie Valenitz is just pretty much a pusher, and she's one of the lower tier Americans. I don't think that she's going to have a big showing at the U.S. Open, and I think that Samez is a little bit more hungry for her. And Samez is a poor woman's version of Leyla Fernandez. Just, you know, plays with a lot of energy. She's going for every shot, and she's all over the court. It just went right now to plus 110. I'm going to take her live first set at plus 110 right now. So hit that like button if you can get Sonmez right now. That's S-O-N-M-E-Z. Zanep Sonmez versus Katie Valenitz, excuse me. Then take it right now at plus 110 for the first set to win that one. Also, I'm going tomorrow with American McCarthy Kessler. You know, spread, that's my girl. I love betting Kessler. She plays another one of our girls, Marketa Vondrousova. And Vondrousova is a really good player, but she's been injured, man. She misses so many tournaments now. She plays when she wants to play. I think that Wimbledon did her well, and she got married, so I don't think that she's going to want this match.
She's like Ostapenko.
Yeah.
She achieved her dream, and we've seen this before in plenty of sports. Some guys, all they want is a second contract. That was their dream.
Yeah.
Some guys is one championship. That was their dream. I think Vondrousova is the same. I think if her career ends today, I think she's going to go back and enjoy her life with her husband and be happy with her tennis career.
And I like her a lot. She's got a really great personality. Some of the worst tattoos I've ever seen in my life.
I like her because she got that big forehand. And, you know, I love those power hitters.
Yeah, she
can
a
really
sweeping
dial
forehand.
It up.
Yeah, yeah, she's a lefty. She's real crafty with her drop shots and stuff like that. So Kessler has to be careful. But, man, Kessler's really good on hard courts. And she's also one of those women that play better in America. It's like she wants to win really bad in front of her home crowd. So I think that Kessler pulls off the upset. Plus 160 is a really good price. I think that she's a lot closer to Marquetta right now than people think. And then lastly, I'm going with Ava Lice. She's the new sensation on social media. Somehow she's getting a lot of pubs. She's always getting talked to off the court now and getting caught in a little fashion. I guess she has a new PR team that's, you know, trying to push her or whatever. She's a talented young lady, good-looking young girl, man. And she plays Francesca Jones, who's a cool player from Britain, but I think the Lice have too much for her when it comes to the hard court. So give me Ava Lice, L-Y-S, minus 150. I'm sorry, some of these pronunciations might be wrong on the tennis. I just realized the other day, Spirit, they have a commercial now on the tennis channel where they say all these players are saying how you really pronounce their name, and it's nothing like the announcers say it. So,
well, even because I know on the tennis TV, right, you'll get different announcers, and depending where they're from, they do it differently. I don't know if they still had it. The WTA website used to have it where you could hear the players announcing their own name.
Yeah.
Which is how I found out about Swiatek in the first place, because Swiatek. That's how Shrimp American Kova. Reads it.
It's Shrimpova, and we think it's Shrimkova. It's
Rybakina.
I thought it was Rybakina at first. You know, it's
same here. Yeah,
they say it so different. Like you might hear one announcer.
Like I always say, Vondrousova. I think it's Vondrousova.
I think it's Vondrousova. Exactly.
But I don't even care. She can DM
Muhova,
me.
Muhova has been called Mukova. Some people put the Z on Verver. Some people just use it with the V. So it's like, so
I don't think they're worried about it. That's an international sport. That's the hazards of talking about international sport. Five Star, I'm going to catch you and the people off guard today. I told you I was picking up a little extra thing. And so I did a little baseball research here. And I'm going to just quote a little bit from this article that I wrote. Mark Twain said the coldest winter I ever spent was the summer in San Francisco. That's right, Five Star. We were complaining about the heat on our phone calls earlier, but I'm looking at a high of 69, and that's the high for the whole day tomorrow at Oracle Park. Unfortunately, to do that and to get these good odds, I'm going to have to take one of the most washed men, a player that you will remember fondly, Justin Verlander, taking the mound for the Giants. He's been pretty poor this season, but I'm actually betting the conditions more than I'm betting the pitchers. On the other side, I got Chicago Cubs, Matthew Boyd, who's been excellent this year, 12-6 with a 2.61 ERA. So I'm not too worried about the Giants. I just got to get through that that top half, and I'm just hoping it's going to be cold. It's windy. I mean, Barry Bonds would have had 900 home runs if he went if he signed with the Yankees and not the Giants. We know that that park is hard to hit a home run in, even in the hot summer conditions. It's a cold one out here right now. So I'm going to go no run first inning tomorrow night for the San Francisco Giants and the Chicago Cubs.
I like that a lot, Spread. All right, man. So you heard Spread. He's going to get it over fast. I used to bet a lot of no run first innings, man. And they can
it's make fun. Sure
they can break you. You know, they're fun, yeah. But they're intense. But it's the quickest way to get paid and get it over with, you know?
Yeah. Like I wrote in the article, it says, you ever watched a tie game in the ninth inning?
Right.
You can just replicate that tension right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's why, you know, because I'm doing content or whatever, that's why people want to write about that. Because a lot of casual gamblers don't have time to watch 3.5 hours of Major League Baseball, you know, family, kids, funny. Sports.
Mm-hmm.
But you could catch an inning of a game real quick.
It's fun. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was thinking about it. Just thinking back, putting myself in that moment. I was at the Venetian, and the last time that I bet, I used to bet crazy on those first innings, man. If it was certain pitchers, I'd throw like $1,000 down, $2,000 down. And, you know, that's a lot of money for a situation like that, because
it's a high variance bet.
It's a high variance bet. Along, you would rather the whole game and things playing out, but the first thing, so much can happen. So I'll never forget this. It was Justin Verlander pitching when he was unhittable for the Astros, man. And I can't remember who they were playing, but I had no run first inning on it. And he got through the first two batters, and the third guy, it was like no balls and two strikes. So I'm like, oh, he's about to strike him out. Home run.
I think people like it though.
I collapsed, bro. I was like, I'm gonna bet this again. I haven't bet it since.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's like the slot machine of Major League Baseball betting. Hey, a quick question here from Al Aris. You set up to receive emails on the website if he wants to join the group?
Hey, Al, if you don't mind, I'd rather you hit me on the DM. The website, we do can accept emails on it, but it goes to my administration team, which is my wife and my CPA and stuff like that. Let's just do it on a DM. If you're on X, it's @5StarInVegas. If you don't have an X, please just create one just to DM me, man, and I'll accept the DM. You can add me on the public page and just be like, hey, 5-Star, I'm trying to DM you. If you can't reach me, I'll DM you right back and get right in touch with you, Al. I'd love to vet you and have you in the group, man. If everything works out, you can jump right on in, man. But I don't want to receive any emails on the website if possible, but you guys can go there and pick up some merch, like, you know, this cup right here, the Waging World.
Man, 5-Star, doesn't it come fast after a lazy summer, right? I'm out there. I'm just out there in the sunshine, raking up my yard, getting everything to get. Oh, chopping this tree. Oh, I got to get this clean over here. Now we got the U.S. Open. I mean, 70 bets available on Bet Online just for the women's only. Yeah. College football is starting. It's the best time to get our NFL futures in. We're finding out these final cuts. You know, Amari Cooper getting signed with the Raiders. Trey Hendrickson re-signing with the Cincinnati Bengals today. Another one I saw during the show, Audric Estime getting cut. I know that doesn't mean a lot of betting the Broncos, but as far as fantasy, I just don't think he was good. I mean, what NFL trait did he have? He wasn't fast enough and he wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
And he doesn't break enough tackles at that speed. But, you know, if you had RJ Harvey or you're a believer in J.K. Dobbins, you know, obviously Sean Payton is. So we got so much work to do right now, and it's a lot of fun to do the show.
Man, I hope you guys got Samez with me. She's fighting right now. I got her first set, as I told you. I told you guys to take it live. Right now she has, once again, Katie Valenet to the deuce on her serve. So I think that any second now Samez will be breaking her. So you guys jump on that one, and we can take her for the match, too. I think the match is probably like -120 right now. And also gave you guys McCarthy Kessler at +160 versus my girl Marqueta Vandrasova, and also Ava Lice at -150 against Francesca Jones. No Ceno today. He'll be back in on Friday. Wednesday. Yeah, I think he'll be back on Wednesday, he said. So we look forward to talking to the young gun of the show and see what he has. He always has some fresh takes and some different ways of approaching Ben Sports. Anything for the people, Spread, before we get out of here?
All right. No, I'm just excited to keep this going. And boy, you know, it really should be week 2, week 1 in college football, a bunch of great matchups, and we're going to have some great tennis all week long.
Guys, we enjoy going live with you. I miss the music. I know guys who are longtime listeners, they know that the vibe is missing without the music. But at this point, it's about getting you guys the information. I do not want to be where you guys continue to miss bits. And my life is so hectic and so busy. Spread's life is hectic and busy. Sino's life is hectic and busy. It's hard enough for us just to get here this hour with you and spend this time and talk about it, because it takes so much time, so much data to do what we do full time, that when we get on the show, man, we got to get in and get out. So forgive us for not having the old school way that the wagering world has been favored, but for the real bettors, they respect this more, because now you get action at the best that we're giving out. It's 3-3. So now's your time to jump in on Samez at +125 live. Best of luck to you all. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan that I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay, for Spread Us Down 5-star in Vegas. This is the Wagering World. I'll see you guys on Wednesday live again.